And now, with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved, here is Dr. James Hauk.
Oh, good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. In fact, praying that you possess the courage to discover who you have always been. That is a soul. Well, welcome to January 14th. Welcome to a new year. Happy New Year, everybody. I'm delighted to be with you here this evening. I hope everybody's seatbelts are fastened and just tight, and hang on for the ride, because here we go. 2026 is going to fly by. And the reason I say that is because as I get older from year to year, time is flying. And not just because I'm getting older, but because when I was a young lad, a wee lad, I used to have older gentlemen, let's just say, those who were in their elderly years, tell me that, you know, two things. They said, son, we're going to share with you two truths. I'm like, okay, I'm all ears, you know, and they're like, okay, when you get older, everything hurts. I'm like, okay. And the second thing is, when you get older, time just speeds up. Well, I didn't think anything of it. I just kind of like dismissed, you know, the old boys and like, okay, whatever, you know, because I was a kid, you know, I just, you fall down, you skin a knee, you're going to heal, you keep going. But the older I get, that ancient wisdom, let's just say, comes back time and time again, especially the part about time just speeding up. And so I know initially I was kind of hoping that 2026 would go slowly, we could ease into it, but no, it has to, you know, start off with a bang. And I feel like ever since January 2nd, I've been shot out of a cannon, you know, and just, okay, here we go. So anyway, I'm Dr. James Hauk, and if you would like more information about me, or if you just want to leave me your comments about tonight's show, I invite you to visit the websites. The first one is www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And the second one is www.reclaiming authenticity.com. And if you would like to call in and be part of the show, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. And just a reminder to everybody, especially people who are tuning in for the first time, that these particular broadcasts are now podcasted, in case you want to go back and again and you know, listen, or you go back into the archives and listen to previous shows. Just go on the website of www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity, and then you can search for any particular show that you would like to listen to. And I am very proud to say that these podcasts are also available for download on iTunes, Audible, Amazon Music, Spotify, as well as this show also replays on WNEW 102.7 FM HD3 out of New York on the weekends. And so that's been exciting to be part of that all of last year. And again, for people tuning in for the very first time, I would just like to say that these broadcasts have always focused on the continued integration of our spirituality and our mental health, all within the context of our relationships with ourselves, others, and God or the divine. And this integration of our spirituality and our mental health is essential, because at any given moment, whenever we take in through our senses, you know, what we see, hear, taste, smell, and touch, anything that's taken in, our minds interpret, you know, and just what we take in through these senses, and based on our previous experiences or our education levels or how we were raised and so forth, our minds interpret what it sees, hears, feels, touch, and tastes, but it often fails to capture a more accurate understanding of deeper lessons and perceived realities and greater truths. And the reason for this is that, well, along with our minds, we had to be very careful about the ego, which is very self-centered and very limited. You know, our egos come in, our egos want to take over, and our egos want to keep us from knowing ourselves as that vast and eternal soul, as well as what needs to heal in us so that we can learn to live in forgiveness, gratitude, bliss, and joy and love. Now, going back to the ego, admittedly, it is our egos that lead us astray with all kinds of thoughts and selfish pursuits, kind of like a lower level consciousness, if you will, which is characterized by being bound by time and space and causation. And yet, we also, ironically, need to pay attention to our egos by asking ourselves in any given situation, what in me has created this perception or this reaction or distortion so that we can better understand where our healing and transformation are still needed? And this is why integrating our spirituality and mental health is vital to our awareness of who we are as souls. So here's a quick example. You know, there is a huge difference between worldly love, which is most familiar to us, you know, and godly or divine love. Now, according to my teacher, dear friend, we often use the term, I love you. But such love is conditional because it's temporary and it changes as it goes back and forth from conflicting emotions of the mind, such, you know, things that include like envy and jealousy and hatred. And yet, godly or divine love is love that's not entangled in the human emotions of the mind. In fact, divine love is eternal. It's not conditional. And it helps us to purify our minds by recognizing only that which is divine in all. And this takes time. This takes a lot of spiritual discipline, a lot of practice. Because like I said, you know, the worldly love, which is conditional, this is what we're most familiar with. This is perhaps what we grew up with. But when we want to embrace godly love or the divine love, we have to realize that that comes without conditions. And we have to really wrap our heads and our hearts around it. Because, well, as I like to say, you know, we have these mountaintop spiritual experiences, and then we have to come down from the mountain, as it were, and next thing we know, we're sitting in traffic right outside of Philadelphia or wherever a large city is in your neighborhood. But it just seems like we have to learn how to live out this godly love, this unconditional love, in a world that's just very content to settle for conditional love. But, you know, this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about. You know, it actually can be summed up in one word, namaste. Have you been practicing? Okay, look, there'll be a quiz later, okay? Because namaste, when roughly translated, means because I see myself as a soul of light. This allows me to greet your lighted soul of who you are, even if you have yet to see it in yourself. Because I see myself as a soul of light, this allows me to greet your lighted soul of who you are, even if you have yet to see it in yourself. Okay? Because really, it doesn't matter who we are or where we were born or into what family, you know, we were placed, you know, the conditions in which we grew up with. You know, we just cannot escape a world full of relationships. Because we are social beings who spend the better part of our lives trying to make sense out of our world, and we struggle to find our place in it. Where do I fit? With whom do I fit? Where do I find meaning and purpose in my life, and so on and so forth? Okay? But also, as social beings, we often experience tremendous pain and suffering in and through these relationships. you know, from overt acts of, you know, maybe somebody betrayed us or had done very cruel things to us. And maybe we've inflicted those things on other people. I mean, we have to be honest with ourselves. We have just as much capability as the next person to either hurt or heal another person. Now, you know, sometimes we're just in the wrong place at the wrong time and things happen to us, you know, but many, many people bear these scars of the physical, the psychological, the emotional, even spiritual woundedness. Okay. But, you know, in fact, as adults, we often don't realize that it's within our struggles with adult relationships. It's just merely trying to work out childhood or adolescent woundedness. And this is something that's fascinating, but yet can be very, very tricky. You know, how do we do this? When we look at our adult relationships, are we trying to work out issues that we never quite got through as a child or as a teenager or as a young adult? So in this show, I will be basically talking about how we integrate and transform our lives through stories. You know, from a place of, let's say, woundedness or disappointment or brokenness and bitterness, now from a place of healing, authenticity, and healthier relationships. Now, the difficulty then is often finding this courage to discover how our woundedness is keeping us from realizing and living out who we are as souls. And trust me, this takes courage. We just don't wake up one day and go, oh, okay, I got this. No problem. You're not even close if that you say that. But the courage that is needed to really ask tough, tough questions of ourselves and to really just explore, where is my woundedness? Where do I struggle? Where do I have questions? You know, and so on and so forth. Okay. And, you know, on the other side of that, part of what this process of self-discovery, let's just say, is also about embracing our gifts or our graces or skills or our uniqueness that we've already come into the world with. I mean, what are these things? Where do I find them? And when I find them, when I discover them, how do I live it out? How do I live these out? Well, this is something that the, you know, Scottish Franciscan, John Duns Scotus, he coined the phrase, you know, this is your hecheitas. This is your thisness. It's your uniqueness that you come into the world with. Or as I like to explain it to kids, it's like it's your thumbprint. You know, no two people have the exact same thumbprint, but yet it's something we all have in common. So in other words, we all have uniqueness, but no two people are going to have the exact same kind of uniqueness. You know, because I'm a firm believer that we do come into this world with everything that we need for ourselves and others. But unfortunately, through various experiences, we've given away parts, if not the whole, of that uniqueness or that thisness. And maybe we did this because we didn't feel as though we lived up to another person's expectation of us. Or maybe we hid this uniqueness from others in order to survive abuse. Or perhaps those aspects of ourselves have been taken away from us and we just simply didn't have the strength to fight that. And we didn't know what was going on. And before we knew it, we couldn't find anything good in us. Well, either way, whenever we become aware that we've done these things, this is where the courage comes in, because it takes tremendous courage to be able to reclaim who we are, to reclaim your voice, your uniqueness, your thisness, to say, I'm not giving away the best of who I am anymore. These belong to me, and I need them, not just for myself, but somebody else needs, you know, my giftedness as well. And the interesting thing is, as we're going to talk about stories here in a second, that whenever this occurs, you know, this awareness, we're soon going to discover that as we are transformed and are being transformed, we begin to tell our stories of this transformation from a different place in us, a place of healing, a place of wholeness and gratitude. Just listen to your stories. You can tell where you are transforming. And in fact, there is so much more to us than what we have become so far, so much more than what we even realize, even on this night. And this is what reclaiming authenticity is all about, finding that courage to be able to reclaim that which has always been in you and who you are. So let 2026 be the year you reclaim more of your authentic self and your voice. Well, again, Happy New Year to everybody. Welcome to 2026. I hope that you're off to a good start. Now, we've just come from another holiday season, and where there are holidays, there are often family gatherings. And you know where I'm going with this. Where there are family gatherings, there is often a lot of food. And when families gather to celebrate the holidays with food, what do we have? No, not a perfect storm, okay? I don't really care who burned what or who spilled what, okay? But whenever we have that combination of a family gathering, food, holidays, celebration, I guarantee you we're going to have an opportunity to tell stories. So what are your New Year's traditions and the stories that go along with that? You know, the ones that you tell year after year after year, okay? You know, I was probably about 8 or 9 when I knew my family stories, front, back, sideways, you know, you name it. I knew it because I heard them every time the family gets together. So on my father's side, I came to appreciate stories and the food from the German, Polish, and Hungarian perspectives. And of course, being tradition, you know, being German and Polish, Hungarian, and all that, on New Year's Day, we ate pork and sauerkraut with mashed potatoes. Anybody else? And you have to get enough juice from the pork, or the sauerkraut, I should say, because I was always told as a kid, well, that's where your luck is. Okay. But you can also eat other things. You know, you could eat stuffed cabbage or pierogies or black-eyed peas on New Year's. But you also have to have, there's no getting around this, you have to have a generous helping of pork and sauerkraut and your mashed potatoes. You can have corn or whatever else, but you have to have those three things. Now, have you ever wondered why people eat pork and sauerkraut on New Year's Day? Well, quite simply, it's because, you know, you want to start off the new year with as much luck as you can get. Remember, you know, the juice, that's where the luck is, the juice of the sauerkraut. Now, the reason why people would eat pork is because it's the way that pigs would root in the mud. You know, they would never root backwards. They would always root forward. And therefore, you want to look forward at the new year and not backwards. Okay. Now, I get that some people in the South might eat a cold black eyed pea salad, or maybe others in the deep South, I'm thinking of Louisiana here, might enjoy a king cake with a little baby figurine or a ring inside. Hopefully you get that before you bite into it and break a tooth. But in China and Japan and many other Asian countries, it's customary to eat noodles on New Year's Day. And the longer the noodle, you know, it symbolizes the longer or the longevity of your life. Now, in Scandinavian countries, eating herring is considered a sign of good fortune for the whole year. Well, I don't know about you. Herring is herring, but I think I'll stick with my pork and sauerkraut. I mean, that's what I was raised on year after year. So before we jump forward into more stories of 2026, let's take a moment and reflect a little bit on 2025. Okay, here we go. Ask yourself, what lessons did you learn over the past year? What lessons have you learned the past year? What insights have you gained? What are some things that you really had to let go of? Or what are some people, or who are some people that you had to say goodbye to? And what are some things that you want to take a hold of this year? See, the interesting thing about reflecting on these questions is that they are often better understood and remembered within the context of our stories. So what is your all-time favorite story? You know, one that you can just sit down and you can listen to or tell over and over and over and over again. And yes, we all have our favorites. I mean, perhaps when you were in school, you know, you learned how to write a story, you know, just the basic structure. And you had to include the what, when, where, why, and how. Or perhaps, you know, maybe you didn't have to write a story, you know, because there was somebody in the family who was the storyteller. Well, in my family, I'm the storyteller. You know, when our kids were smaller, instead of reading them a story before they went to bed, I would often tell them a story. You know, I would make stuff up, but it was animated and it was a lot of fun, which, you know, watching their eyes and how their minds, you know, would connect to the patterns and the pictures and so forth. And they would get all wound up and they wouldn't be able to go to sleep afterwards. And then for some reason, I would get into trouble. Like I caused that, you know, but that's for another episode between me and my wife. But we had fun. You know, we'd always tell stories, and we're just all lovers of books here. But telling stories and being a good storyteller is key, because everybody wants to hear a story. So when you listen to or you read a story, what captures your attention? Is it the mental images that are formed in your mind? Or maybe it's the deeper lessons or the morals found in the storyline itself. Or perhaps it was the way in which the story was told that created this excitement or this enthusiasm in you. And this is perhaps why, you know, the Audible app is so popular. And you have a book or something, you just, you know, can't take time to read, but hey, you got the app. You plug it in and you download your Audible book, and away you go. You can listen to it in the car. You can listen to it anytime. So tell me a story. Well, back in April of 2020, just as COVID was just starting to ramp up, NPR ran a story entitled "How Stories Connect and Persuade Us: Unleashing the Brain Power of Narrative." Now, according to this article, with the benefit of MRI scans, many different areas of the brain would just light up when someone is listening to a story or a narrative. You know, certain parts of the brain, such as the language centers of the temporal and frontal lobes that we take meaning from, were lighting up. And the sensory motor center was lighting up as if we are experiencing walking and hearing and tasting, you know, the different aspects that are found in a story. And then, of course, there are the emotional centers, such as the limbic system, which really enhances empathy when listening to stories. You know, we feel that we are part of that story, and we can really understand, even though it wasn't written about us. Somehow, some way, we can identify with the story and the characters. But you know, it's not just the areas of the brain that are responsible for language processing, but other neurological circuits also light up. Okay, so for example, during the more emotional sections of a story, the ones that may just elicit tremendous joy or tears, sadness, and so forth, you know, during the more emotional sections of a story, one study found that neurons responsible for processing these emotional responses to sounds, they were activated. So, of course, there was a connection between the storyteller and the story listener. So, as you hear a story unfold, your brainwaves actually start to synchronize with those of the storyteller. And a Dr. Uri Hansen, he's a professor of psychology and neuroscience at Princeton University. He also discovered that as one person told a story and the other listened, the greater the listener's comprehension, the more closely the brainwave patterns mirrored those of the storyteller, which he called, neural coupling, that the listener's brain activity mirrors that of the storyteller's. And that's fascinating, just all on how different parts of the brain are activated in, by storytelling and story listening. And storytelling also helps with learning because stories are easy to remember. And organizational psychologist Peg Neuhauser, she found that learning, which stems from a well-told story, is remembered more accurately and for far longer than learning simply derived from, having to learn facts and figures. Put it into a story, paint a picture, create a picture in other people's minds. Now, psychologist Jerome Bruner's research also suggested that facts are 20 times more likely to be remembered if they're part of a story. And I can certainly attest to this because I remember the stories still to this day that my history teacher told us way back in eighth grade. Okay? He loved history. He lived history. And whether he was talking about the Revolutionary War or the Civil War, he would often place us in the middle of the story and tell us to imagine being on a battlefield, smelling the gunpowder and hearing the cannons and what else was coming up for us. I mean, he made history lessons come alive because he wasn't that old, but he knew how to tell the story to the point where he made you feel part of it. It's almost as if he lived or was reliving the historical moments. And I'm certain for those of you, again, who listen to audiobooks, you tend to remember more of the story if there's a little dramatization or animation sound effects that go with it. So if there's like thunder, that's rumbling in the background or dramatization, there we go, of music. With suspense and stuff, and it goes with great mystery stories. And back in the olden days of just the magic of radio, where they were talking about like murder mystery stories and whodunit and everything, and just the music that was used to create the suspense and just it was phenomenal, because that really drew in the people who were listening, and created this powerful picture in their minds. So let's bring all of this into the world of mental health. Okay? Storytelling is a powerful means of helping people find healing and peace that they desperately seek, because our stories place our experiences within a context. It's how people find meaning and make sense out of what they've been through and or are going through presently. So when you think about it, everyone I counsel, has told a story to me, because everybody has a story to tell. And every person's life is a story worth telling. And every story worth telling is a story worth listening to. And I've listened to many stories told in sadness and pain with some very powerful metaphors. I've listened to stories told in heartbreak and in anger. And I've listened to many stories told in the larger context of joy and peace and hope. And one of the more interesting aspects I've found is that when people tell their story from a place of anger, let's just say, they typically forget all the other good things that have occurred in their life. It's like when we're in that anger mode, we're in that fight or flight arousal state, it seems like our anger triggers cortisol to focus on a particular threat. I mean, this is how we're hardwired, okay? And this cortisol actually disrupts our memory centers in the brain, the hippocampus, the amygdala, leading to form, to a form of, let's say, amnesia, and making it impossible to retrieve positive experiences. It's almost as if we have short-term memory loss. All the good and wonderful experiences, when anger shows up, ironically, are forgotten. It's as if the past emotional, psychological, physical, and spiritual woundedness is all that can be remembered in the heat of the moment. But when we get used to telling a story a certain way, we do tend to forget all of the other things that came before. It's almost as if it's conveniently erased for the time being. But as we tell our stories from a healthier place, it also allows others to connect to healthier places in themselves. Great storytelling is contagious. But what allows us to make this shift? Well, author Marianne Williamson states that we can tell how much we have healed from the past because we've forgotten the pain in the memory. Okay, it's kind of like a reverse, I'm kind of blanking on the term here, like a reverse short-term memory loss. But now it comes with the anger because we've healed from the past. Now we no longer in the memory have that pain. It's kind of ironic that as we tell stories from a place of wholeness, we tend to forget the pain when the stories are told from a place of wholeness. And yet, when we tell our stories from a place of anger, we tend to forget all the good. It's fascinating, and it's all in the context of greater storytelling. Well, I really would love to hear how you have found healing through storytelling. So again, if you want to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. And I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. And I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Okay, welcome back. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you're listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Well, earlier in the broadcast, we've been talking about a different way to look at how we might find healing when another person wounds us emotionally, or wounds us psychologically, or wounds us physically, or even spiritually. And a key piece of healing for us is to perhaps first seek to understand not only how people tell their stories, but also question in terms of what must have happened in another person's life, their own pain that they've experienced, their own suffering, their own sorrow that perpetuates their need to wound others. And, you may be familiar with the old saying out there that wounded people wound others, hurt people hurt others. So what are these wounds? What is this hurt that just perpetuates this cycle of I hurt, therefore I feel as though I have the right to hurt somebody else? Okay. Well, as I mentioned in the first half of the show, many people are just unable to perceive their insights and their strengths, almost as if they cannot see themselves capable of healing, or let alone achieving anything meaningful with their lives. Because most of the time, people are content to live for brief moments of joy and celebration, you know, marked off by these transitional milestones of, let's say, baptisms, or marriages, birthdays, graduations, promotions, retirements, so on and so forth. Other than that, okay, life is pretty mundane. Well, again, equally ironic is that when it comes to wrestling with life's questions, many people are often overwhelmed by not only the concept that the answers they seek often lie within themselves, but also the belief that inner freedom and peace and joy and unconditional love are all too good to be true, that these things that people talk about are just meant for somebody else. They just can't imagine that those things are there for them as well. Again, it takes courage to look within. And what is keeping those wonderful things that they brought into the world? Everything is right there. Never settle for where you are now in your life when you understand that there is so much more to you than what you have become this far. Now, the human voice has power because it carries the energy of its vibrations. Again, this is scientifically proven. You know, whenever people hear somebody talking, you got this little thing called an eardrum, you know, and it's just vibrating away. Right. And also, you know, as we all started off in life, you know, we like to be held. You know, we're just hardwired for that sense of touch. And, you know, we listen to human voices around us and the vibrations. And we got pretty good at recognizing, okay, that's a happy tone. That's not a happy tone. This is an angry tone, or this is a very loving, compassionate tone. Now, the reason why the human voice has this kind of power carried through the energy of its vibrations is that, you know, people who deny the truth find it difficult then to tolerate those who acknowledge the truth, or at least hold a different perspective. It's almost as if, you know, the human voice that's speaking truth is just too much to bear. Okay. But I found it very helpful to reframe the question from, well, why are people like this? To, I wonder what has so wounded others that they can continuously act out of their woundedness in relationships and then expect different results. What has so wounded others that they continuously act out of their woundedness? And we wonder why people don't heal. Well, back in February of 1965 at Cambridge University, there was a very prestigious debate between then William F. Buckley Jr. and James Baldwin. Now, James Baldwin is often remembered as a writer, a playwright, a poet, even an activist. And he died in 1987, and his words found in this debate continue to ring true for us today. Because at one point in the debate, James Baldwin stated that, you know, Sheriff Clark in Selma, Alabama, who was known for his part in the violent arrest of the civil rights protesters during the marches from Selma to Montgomery, okay, that's Sheriff Clark. He says, Sheriff Clark simply cannot be dismissed as a total monster, because I'm sure that he loves his wife. I'm sure that he loves his children. And he maybe even likes to get drunk. One has to assume that he is a man like me. But he doesn't know what drives him to use a club or to menace others with a gun and to use a cattle prod. You know, something awful must have happened to him So he justifies being able to put a cattle prod against a woman's breast. Because when you think about it, what happens to the woman is ghastly. But what happens to the man who does this is in some way much, much worse. And you can watch this debate on YouTube, you know. But what I find fascinating is that what James Baldwin is reminding us of is that an offender and an oppressor suffer from a greater tragedy of inner pain than perhaps the one who suffers outwardly. Okay, let me say that again. You know, an oppressor, okay, one who goes around inflicting pain. You know, they suffer from a greater tragedy of an inner pain than the one perhaps who they cause suffering on. What has so wounded other people that they're acting out of their woundedness, they're acting out of their pain, and then they think that's okay? See, this is where real healing needs to take place. And this is the phenomenon I run into time and time again, counseling clients who want to heal from their past as well as improve their present relationships. Now, again, keep in mind that whatever we are struggling with in our personal and professional relationships, more than likely, we're struggling with the same issue in ourselves. Remember, whatever negative energy is sent out eventually comes back to us, like living in an echo. And where we can find our healing and offer the same healing to others is for us to first change our voice. Not by its registry going up and down or loud or soft or whatever, but when we pay attention to our voice and the power our voice has, and when we're able to do this, we're also changing the vibration of that negative, toxic energy. If you've been following me for some time now, I'm sure you've heard me say on more than one occasion that self-inflicted mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual wounds are like the vibration of an echo. You know, that the negative energy of what we send out through our thoughts and our words and our actions will return to us. Just like when we hear the sound of our voice echoing back in our ears whenever we're in a cave or a tunnel and we go, hello, we're going to hear it. But it's not just the negative energy that's going to bounce back to us, so to speak. It's also the positive energy. Again, whatever we send out through our thoughts, our words, our actions will return to us. That's just, not that it needs to be proven, but it's been shown over and over and over again through generations and cross cultures and language barriers and everything. Everybody experiences the same thing. It's just a phenomena that's part of the human experience. So the same thing is true, whether we're sending out negativity or whether we're sending out positive, you know, wonderful, you know, just wonderful energy, even in the form of prayer, especially in the form of prayer, sending out positive energy. That energy is going to go out and achieve what it needs to achieve. But it's also going to bounce back to us, you know, because, say it with me, we live in an echo. Now, this energy, unless we transform the energy through healing our own wounds and learning to tell those old wounded stories, unless we're able to change those things and transform them and tell our stories from a healthier place in us, whatever we send out will come back to us exactly how it went out from us. Okay? And as we explore our memories, ironically, again, we often catch a glimpse of what healing and wholeness might look like for us. Even if it's like just a flash of like, ooh, yeah, we see it. That's what I want. I want the healing. I want to be whole. And when this insight occurs, you know, we may be tempted to resist change, or we might run away from this transformation, even sabotage ourselves by falling back into old ways, let's just say, in order to avoid embracing what thorough healing requires of us. That is, maybe acknowledging a wrongdoing, or asking for and receiving forgiveness, or letting go of bitterness, letting go of resentment, taking responsibility, or living in gratitude, learning how to live in healthier relationships with loved ones and friends, co-workers, and so forth. Well, during these winter months, if you love to curl up with a good book, I got a recommendation for you. And trust me, I have a big stack of books I could recommend, but I always enjoy reading The Wounded Healer by Henry Nouwen. Now, in it, he states that somewhere close to 74%, that's a significant number, he states that 74% of people are often compelled to enter helping relationships because they see themselves as wounded. Now, I'll take this one step further here and say that people not only might see themselves as wounded, but they also know the transformative healing that takes place within them, as well as the effects that it has on the rest of humanity. And it does. It has a wonderful ripple effect. So people who get into helping relationships or first responding or something, you know, they might say, okay, yeah, I'm wounded, but transformation is occurring in me, and this is why I do what I do. In fact, this is where the understanding of that Hindi greeting, you know, namaste, comes from. I'll say it again. You know, this is something we all need to commit to memory, that the light or God in me recognizes the light or God in you. Okay? But, you know, still looking to others for approval and self-worth appears to be a natural part of developing a sense of who we are, apart from storytelling. And in fact, this kind of looking for approval, this kind of behavior, is often how we first learn about ourselves and others and the world. Because we have families, we have teachers, and other early childhood authority figures reflecting their own views and mirroring these perceptions back to us. Okay? And it is all done through what? Storytelling. Okay? So here's a good example. Long before we can form words, okay? Long before we can say mama, dada, whatever, we are skilled at reading facial prompts. We are able to, you know, sense another's approval or disapproval, or recognizing tones of love and laughter or anger and contempt, distinguishing between a loving touch and cold detachment, and learning every other human emotion in between. But here's the interesting part. Sometime around 3 months of age, give or take, here's a little flexibility in that, okay, we begin to engage in face-to-face interactions with our caregivers. It's kind of a social referencing, as it were. And everybody's gone through this. I don't care who you are, because everybody started out life as an infant. You know, so as infants, we display visual, facial, and vocal behaviors in response to how we are being treated through, let's say, a kind of give and take exchange with others, which typically helps us to understand different situations. You know, what does it mean to, well, I can't do this at school, but I can do this at home. Okay. And as a result, we hold these initial interactions in ourselves as we develop a sense of trust and safety. Or if these things don't happen, we're going to develop a sense of suspicion and distrust. Now, from the early stages of infancy, we've learned to regulate our affect as we took social cues from the people around us. You know, in other words, how to express our feelings appropriately, when and where such emotions should be displayed, you know, such at work, play, or school, or family celebrations, or funerals, and within the context of our beloved sports teams. And I don't have to tell you, because I live outside of Philadelphia, you know what I'm talking about. All right. Anyway, but as we are physically, you know, and emotionally maturing, you know, we have to learn, become less dependent on others for this, let's say, these affirmations. And we need to replace them with an internalization or an individual sense of who we are. I mean, we may start off life this way, but after a while, like, we got it. So when the external affirmations are not there, we can affirm ourselves. You know, for example, let's stay with a nice baseball analogy. Let's say that, you hit a home run, you're a hero. You are the one who won the game, and we're going to carry you out on shoulders, and everything's good. People are chanting your name and celebrating, dancing in the streets. But what would happen if you struck out and you lost the game? Would you still be carried out into the streets, people dancing and celebrating? Probably not. They might call you all kinds of names. They might call you a bum. They might refer to you as the worst person that ever played the game. So, who are you when those moments occur? When you're not getting the affirmations, you know, can you say to yourself, you know what? I struck out. I'm going to need to work on that. Okay. Or I'm not really a great hitter, but I'm going to do my best to improve. But I'm still a very good person. I am filled with value and dignity and worth. You hear the difference? Who we are versus what we do or don't do. Two different things. And let's also keep in mind that just as we initially look to others for our sense of affirmation and belonging and acceptance, so too, others are looking to us for their affirmations. Okay? So understanding the previous hurts and pain and so forth in another, understanding why a person is the way they are, seeing and understanding their history of events, circumstances that may have shaped them and filled them with either fear and pain and bitterness can move us to forgive them more easily and help them to begin their process of telling their stories differently. Okay? Stories have just as much impact to hurt or heal. Okay? Well, I encourage you now in the year 2026, you know, at the beginning of January, we have lots of New Year's resolutions out there. And ironically, we're kind of past the deadline here. But on average, nationwide average, by January the 9th, people have already given up their New Year's resolutions. But let me offer another one. You know, this is something that you can do day in and day out, regardless of the weather. Okay. Listen to how you tell your stories. Are they told from a place of woundedness and pain? Or are they told from a place that's healing, a place of wholeness? Because we're always going to remember the stories, families and so forth. You know, that's just, you know, the facts are the facts. You know, but let us keep in mind that whenever we tell these stories, also allow room to tell the rest of the story. In other words, you know, we could say, well, this happened and that happened and this person married this person divorced that person, whatever. But, and then you can bring in the healing, you know, a healthier way to tell these stories. That there was so much more to the person, that in a way they really blessed the family, or they really turned out to be a great person, whatever. Okay. Yeah. Everybody has an authentic voice, that I guarantee you. And where there's a voice, there is sound. And of course, where there is sound, there is vibration. And this is where healing occurs, because whenever we can change the voice, we change the vibration, we tell the story differently, and ultimately, we change the energy. Well, I'm Dr. James Hauken. You've been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. And let's keep in mind, it's true. There is so much more to us than what we have become so far, so much more than what we've even realized. And this is what Reclaiming Authenticity is all about. Finding the courage to reclaim that which has always been in you, and ultimately, who you are as a soul. So, again, let 2026 be the year you reclaim more of your authentic voice and self. Namaste.
for an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Hauk. It's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on PBS Radio TV.